Hello, listener. Welcome to the podcast and welcome to the next in my series of Mindful Meets. Now, a slight departure today in some respects, in that we are talking about a particular cuisine, but not a departure from the perspective of talking about food in general, but also talking about someone's connection with food and how the food or how her particular food of her life, of her upbringing, of her heritage is so important to her. But we're also going to explore her role as a cooking teacher, an Indian cookery teacher, and her idea around the philosophy of Indian food, which is a phrase that really grabbed me when I heard it. So we're going to ask her to explore that with us. And we're going to bust a few myths about Indian food. And we're going to try and really get you going, get those taste buds going and inspire you to make some Indian food, which is going to be actually quite different from what you might get on the high street. We're not going to be knocking anything that you get on the high street, but we're going to sort of talk about the fact that we haven't really even started to understand how amazing Indian food is. So after that rather long introduction, I wanted to set the scene, but we are speaking today to Sashi Krishna. Sashi, you are very welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much. It's so lovely to be here and I can't wait. Thank you.
How nice. Isn't that lovely? So we're all smiles and we're all raring to hear about Indian food, about Indian cuisine culture, and also about how you came to it. So I usually start from the beginning, but actually I just feel like mixing it up a bit today. So why don't we start by talking about the teaching and about this philosophy of food idea and the process of the teaching and what you found it brings to people. So tell us about this lovely journey and this experience that you create through your teaching.
Well, I can talk for days, but we've got time. It's one of my favorite topics, and without a doubt, Indian food, I think to start with, I think I would just like to say that it's got a lot of flack, and the way Indian food, I would say, misunderstood, misinterpreted. It's as simple as that. I think the word takeaway is what synonymous is with Indian food. And that's one thing that's always hurt me, made me feel rather upset about it. And coming from the south of India, born and brought up, and living in England for 23 years, the one thing that I can say is that perception rather has not changed much, even in today's world. It's definitely better, but not as what it can be or it should be. So Indian food for me is all about my memories, my ethos, the culture where I come from. But what it's represented here, as I said, is a takeaway. It's full on fat, it's greasy, it's heavy. And people associate just chicken tikka masala or a butter chicken or a jalfrezi to Indian food. Now, there's nothing wrong with it, but that is just a food or a version of food is how I would want to say. But India is such a big country and such diverse. And my favorite thing to say is you give the same ingredients, there's about 23 to 26 different states. You give the same ingredients to 23 or 26 different states, you will get 26 different dishes.
How exciting. What a journey that would be. Wow.
I would love to do that one day. But that's in a very simple way to put it. Now, in answer to your question, Indian food's heritage go back to Ayurveda and the times that it started. And we all know Ayurveda. Whether we really understand it or not, it's different. But coming from Ayurveda to today, where it is, it's lost somewhere. Its true value, its true heritage, its true meaning of it. And what I teach, and that's what I've come to know in my journey the last few years. So when I got the opportunity to teach, this is one thing that I learned and uncovered is there was a whole lot of population who do not really know what Indian food is. And that was the pivotal point for me to start my business thinking. Maybe I've been presented the opportunity to present real food to teach people, and that is what I teach in my business is the food that I grew up eating, the food my husband has grown up eating because we come from two different states. Now that says a lot. Vegetarian, meat eater, our cuisines are slightly different, but in a way we use the same ingredients. And that's exactly, I'm going to summarize my life. That's exactly what Indian food is. It's an amalgamation of flavors. It's very healthy. It's naturally vegetarian, which not many people know of. And people just think, is it chicken? Is it heavy? And I always say no. And I would like to burst the myth saying Indian people associate Indian food with spiciness. Flavors is always your king. It is the king. You can make it spicy or you can make it mild. It's purely one's choice. So that is exactly what I teach, is to bring the real flavors out. And all my recipes are family recipes. So the ethos is if I don't cook for my family and friends, I don't teach you. And not only do you learn the recipes, but you also learn how to adapt it, how to use it again, how to alternate it, what are the substitutes, and all those things that will really empower people with the understanding of not being afraid to try new recipes. And I'm an advocate for cooking is Zen for me. That's how I look at it. Food is energy. And many people don't realize that. So what you put in, we always talk about manifestation. Food is the same for me. When I cook, I'm there 100% focused because I pass on a negative or a positive energy into it, depending on how much I put into it. So I always encourage people to look food as feeding your loved ones, be it anybody, including yourself, because what you feed is what you're going to get back in return. So
Absolutely right, yes.
cooking is not a chore if you really enjoy it, but a lot of it comes down to understanding as well. So I would always say, cook with love. It's as simple
And I
as
really,
that.
yes, and I really like what you said just now about even if you're just cooking for yourself, because I think a lot of people don't bother because, the quantities are too small, or they think that they're too small. And I think that the whole connection with mindful eating is about preparing food that is nourishing, that is going to be helpful for you, that is a joy to create, that there's actually a mindful experience, isn't there, in the preparation of it. And to actually try and find the time to build the time into a day or a weekend when you are actually enjoying the process of making that food and interacting with the ingredients and looking at the colors change and all of that. All of that is such a mindful, positive, relaxing, as you say, kind of Zen experience, isn't it? And this building of this wonderful dish that you then serve to yourself, even if your dinner for one, that doesn't matter, will you serve to other people? Because a lot of people that come to me have fallen out of love with food because they've been dieting for quite a long time. They've been looking for low-fat options. Maybe they have a vegetarian or vegan diet, but they don't quite know how to prepare food. So they're eating a lot of processed food. Meat eaters, they're also eating quite a lot of processed food. And so the quality isn't there, and the connection with loving food is not there, because food, very often, for people that have had a history of weight issues, is something that you're trying to restrict and not something that you're trying to enjoy. So one of the reasons why I wanted to get you on the podcast was to actually have someone who is really talking with such passion and joy and emotional connection with food, who actually encourage people to think about that principle in their wider relationship with food and the food that they actually choose to eat and to prepare. So when you were talking about cooking Indian food, what immediately came to mind was, what do we think the stumbling blocks are? So that's why people don't think they can, or aren't maybe brave enough to do it. And you'll be able to answer that, because I imagine that people come to you with preconceived ideas about what it is, but that maybe people think it's quite complicated, that you have to, have 101 jars of spice that you might use once a month, and then they end up at the back of the cupboard kind of thing. So that maybe is another myth, I don't know, that we need to bust. So tell us a little bit about the mechanics of your Indian food that you.
I think it's a beautiful question you asked me, and I'm going to answer that in two or three different parts, which will all make sense, of course. I think fundamentally, as I started in the beginning of the conversation, it's got a lot of flack for what it is. Of course, a restaurant food is no way a representation of real Indian food. And the perception that prevails, if that's what people have had bad experiences, then that's what it is. But when you cook at home, it's nothing like that. When you look at the real Indian food, that it's nothing like it. It's fundamentally vegan, a lot of dishes, vegetarian. You can eat meat, but nobody says you have to eat meat, but it's a choice. It's available. So I think the first starting point is, if people can unlearn and undo the thinking of, oh, this is what it is, if they can change the perception and come with an open mind, I can guarantee 100%. And I'm talking from experience as well, with people that I've taught who've had history and bad relationship with food, or I don't like Indian food, but I've been gifted this session, I'm doing it. Come back to me and say how they were pleased that they were brave enough to do it, and now that they go back to those recipes. So that leads into the point that because you think of it a certain way, the perception that prevails, it's not necessarily true. That's the first point. And secondly, the ingredients part. Of course, yes, when you buy ingredients, it's in a jar or pot. But again, that's the understanding. So part of my session, I completely recognize that, because you don't want to buy 100 grams of a flour that you're not going to use it. So when you do a session with me, for example, or in my session, I always help people how to use it, so they don't feel that they bought something that's going to go for waste. Of course, it's money, it's all those things, but it's about the understanding. So I would like to think, and sometimes you just don't need many ingredients. People think food is complicated, and you're absolutely right, Laurie. People think it's complicated, but it really isn't. And always I go to the analogy of, when you look at a recipe, when I teach biryani and I give them a recipe card or the prep and ingredient, and they look at me going, oh my God. And I always tell people when I'm teaching in person, I said, don't worry, don't look at it. I said, look at it as I have given you the details of absolute every single ingredient. So when we talk about it, then when you start prepping, they understand why that process is happening. It's like you've got your whole spices together. Now, those five whole spices is just a little process, but on paper, it's five steps. It's not five steps, it's just ingredients. So I always tell people, don't judge a recipe by just the recipe card or the face of it, because I'm just helping you understand, break the process, and putting them together is much easier once you understand. So a lot of time it's the perception. A lot of time there are dishes that are definitely tedious, but it's the lack of understanding that really prevails. And one of my favorite thing is, there are days that it's really busy. I've got leftovers, I've got little vegetables. I just raid my fridge and I call it clear the fridge out day. And I literally, that's my favorite version of, it's almost like falling in love. What do I create today is how I go about it. And I've learned it. Because I love it, I'm thinking, right, I've got this, what have I got in my freezer? When I say in freezer, not frozen food. I try to sprout my pulses. I'll touch on that later. So I can put things together, but it's all about the understanding, and it's all about knowing what to do. Once you get that fundamental understanding, believe me, sky is the limit.
Yes.
Just put things together, and after you've put that together, you can almost feel like you've nourished. There is a tree that's grown in front of you, right from the seed to a plant. It's almost like every step of that is like you're planting a seed, you're putting water, you're looking after it. But really, it's that kind of joy when you start enjoying it. And there's a new food on the table. And one of my favorite things to say is we look at salad, even salads, but you can experiment with it. And I'm one of the advocate for that. That's my favorite thing. I amalgamate flavors. I put leftovers together, and you can make simple, nutritious meal. You don't need big ingredients. So I try to bring that in the sessions as well. And the recipes I teach are naturally vegetarian, but there are some meat dishes as well. But I call it my best friend in the kitchen is my spice box, which has some basic spices that I can't live without when I step into the kitchen. And I can assure you, if you have like a template, which I can give, you can make using the same recipe 10 different dishes. Same recipe, just alternate, beat a vegetable, beat a lentil. Now that's every single day a new dish, and they all taste different. How fantastic is that?
Yes, amazing. So I'm going to push you on that, and I'm going to ask, what would be, so we're going to give the listener something here. What would be your can't live without spices
Ooh,
flavorings?
that's a fabulous question. What spices can I? More than the spices, I'll start with salt. And here's my reasoning. Salt is one of the fundamental basic, whether you put it under spice or ingredients, you need a pinch of salt to elevate the whole dish. You could have made the best of dishes without a salt. No. Indian food, definitely. So whether you add half a teaspoon or 1 teaspoon, so salt is a must have. Though I know a lot of people have seen that say, oh, I don't like salt. And I'm saying, can you please add a little bit? That'll make a difference. So I always ask them to taste. And I always encourage people to taste at certain stages so they understand what every ingredient bring to that next level. And by the time they finish their cooking and when they eat, they almost look at it like, oh my God. I said, exactly. Sometimes it's just that one spice. So for me, in my cupboard, there's always in my spice book like mustard seeds and cumin, chili powder, turmeric powder. There's dry red chilies, and my favorite herb is curry leaves. I love it. Lentils and things I can alternate. That's fine. And if it's whole spices, which is called garam masala, because I don't use them together, but for certain dishes I do. Then a little bit cinnamon, cardamom, cloves, bay leaf. These are my basic staples. You can create, just keeping these, a multitude of dishes.
Yes, wonderful. I can imagine all the lovely colours laid out in little measuring bowls, all kind of ready to go into your clear out the fridge curry. I think that's great. Yes. Lovely. So we're really starting to get a feel of how important it is to you. And you mentioned when we were talking before we came on air about this idea about the philosophy of food. Would you like to share a little more about that with us?
Right, that's again another favorite topic of mine, and it's a self-discovery. So today I'm able to articulate it, but it's in my own journey. That's what I've discovered. I've had a corporate career before I had my son 15 years ago, and then having given up my work, raising a young child. And I've had history when I was young. My mom always said I was a terrible eater. She would have to struggle. So I was very conscious when I had my son that I'm not going to make that mistake with him. So I've been very mindful when he was growing up that I gave him absolutely everything that he wouldn't refuse later. But partly also, I grew up in India and I'm living in England. So I was raising him here. So I started thinking about how do I bring in the vegetables that is here? For example, courgettes was never known when I was growing up in India. Avocado was not there at that time. So there are lots of vegetables like kale, but how do I bring that into the food is when the journey started. And the more I experimented, the more I felt myself immersed into it. And no matter how I felt on the day, ups, downs, mean, life is never easy. It throws curveballs at you all the time. But I realized that I found myself in the kitchen so much immersed that I forgot my grief or my sorrows. I really enjoy it. And it's become part of my ethos. And that's when I started discovering that food is energy. So if I'm in a bad mood cooking food and feeding my child or my husband, now it's okay. But what am I feeding them? Is it a grudge? Is it resentment? Is it unhappiness? It does affect us in the long run. It's almost like, as I talked about before, it's like manifestation. What you put out is what you're going to get in. But I felt like I wasn't that. I just felt, regardless of what went on in my life, I was so happy when I pulled out the chopping board, when I opened my spice rack, when I opened the cupboard, and when I was feeding my child. So that's where the love for food started. And then the more I dug deep into the food, I almost felt lost, and I could be easily in the kitchen for a few hours not knowing. And that's when I realized it's not a chore. It's not a must-do thing. I mean, let's look at it this way from a different angle. Food, whether you like it or not, it's a fundamental requirement. And we all know the saying, you are what you eat. So when it is as fundamental as sleeping, breathing, and you want to feed you and your family, why would you not make that a pleasant one or a good one? So that is when the philosophy started, and that's exactly what I encourage people, because I've come to realize, and I read this famous quote, which I absolutely love, a recipe has no soul. You, the cook or the chef, must bring soul to that recipe. That's exactly how I can describe the philosophy of food. And that's what I encourage people when I teach, is to cook. You can cook a simple recipe, you can cook a detail, it doesn't matter. When you go to the kitchen, if you can approach life in that way, everything else falls into place.
And I'm sitting here listening and thinking that there are some people that have worked with me, and there are some people that I know who don't enjoy cooking. And I wonder whether it's because partly because that activity feels like a chore because of what we're doing it for. In other words, we kind of have to do it. We have to grab some food. We have to feed ourselves before we're running out the door to do this or that, rather than giving it more importance, rather than understanding how much of an holistic benefit it can have for us. And that maybe some people who don't like cooking, it's because of the food that they're preparing, that they're not sort of allowing themselves to be a little bit more experimental, perhaps, to try different approaches, to buy a new book, to, engage with you in your sessions, that kind of thing. And I know it's about time. I mean, I'm naive enough to think that everybody's got all afternoon to do it. But I always say to my clients, you prioritize everything else. You prioritize your work meetings. You prioritize things that your children are doing. You are organized around your holiday and other trips and what's happening in the house and paying bills. And yet, so often, the preparation of the food is relegated to something that's very last minute. It isn't planned, it isn't really thought about. And so, it doesn't have that equal importance with the other things that we're scheduling in our life. And I listen to you and I think, gosh, there are so many people out there for whom cooking is not easy or who don't like it, that they're just missing such an opportunity to maybe find something in themselves, like you did. I mean, you cooked and you prepared food, but it wasn't until you really started to think about it that it really connected with something that was quite deep inside you, a real sort of essence of who you were and how you expressed your love and how you wanted to nurture and nourish both yourself and other people. And I hope that maybe just one person listening is going to sit there and think, I think I'd like some of that in my life. I'd like some of this philosophy of food. I'd like to put my soul into food. What does that look like? How am I going to do it? What do I feel like making? Because yes, we're talking about the amazing food, and I have to, I'll say from what I've tasted both in the UK when I've gone slightly off piece on the menu, but also I was lucky enough to spend some time in the Delhi and Agra region, and what I ate out there was absolutely amazing. But it doesn't really matter what cuisine it is in a way, just to sort of connect with cooking and preparing food. I hope that what you're saying is inspiring to other people. Certainly is having that effect on me. I was really went for one then, but it just really got me going. Really got me going, Sashi.
I mean, I think for me, I come from India and I teach, and that's what I'm passionate. But that ethos can be, or that feeling can be applied to life in general, no matter what you're doing. If you can bring that soul into that, it goes a long way. Because ultimately, and when and as you rightly said, people don't prioritize food. And the very simple thing is you prioritize your holidays. If you take a car, would knowing that you are low on fuel, would you drive the car? Or would you just keep saying, oh, let's try the luck, let's push it, it'll stop. So why would you put your body like that as a last? It's very simple. It is fuel. And
Yes.
we don't fuel it properly. I mean, even fuel, you can put some cheap, nasty fuel. I mean, of course, I don't think that's much available today. You go to any petrol station, it's the same. But why would you not look at it as fuel for you and your family? And the fuel you put inside the car is what is going to give performance of the car for the longevity. Life is just the same. It's what you bring into that food, how you do it, how well you can nourish it, is the longevity of your life, just not of yourself, but of your loved ones as well. And that
Yes.
is life you live. So that is important. That is a priority.
Yes, and we've kind of come round again to that, to the idea of Indian food being a healthy option and being a way to nourish ourselves, particularly if we are choosing the vegetarian option, not because it's wrong to eat meat, but because quite naturally, we're eating more vegetables. And, you know, generally that's something you and the majority of my professional colleagues advocate: more plants, more vegetables. But I was also interested, I'm just interested in this idea about how studying and how learning how to cook this wonderful Indian food affects people. So when you're teaching, I just am wondering and imagining that people go on, even though there may be 2 hours with you, they go on a bit of a discovery journey with you. Am I right? She's nodding fiercely here. So tell us about that, the experience of people learning how to cook this beautiful food.
Yes, you're absolutely right. My business is called Sashi Samyal. Samyal means in the South Indian language of Tamil means cooking. So the business is called Sashi's Cooking, Sashi Samyal. And the tagline for it is experience authentic Indian cooking, which is what the people who come to learn with me, they get to experience. They not only get to experience how to cook the recipe, but I also take them on a journey of the science behind it, why you add, what you do, what you don't do, how else to do, how not to do. Can you, if there is an addition of salt, can you pull back the food? Can you not, the do's, the don'ts, and everything. So I take them on a journey, and it's a 2 hour cook along session on Zoom. So it's not like I'm standing here just giving instructions saying, okay, welcome to my session. This is what you're going to do. I am actually doing it with them. It's a cook along
Right.
session, so they are not on
Yes.
your own. So we are all on the same page, we're all doing the same thing. And I tell them the reason rather than saying just add, which you can just follow a recipe blindly, some process have a reasoning for it. So I tell them the reason sometimes, even if you don't take away anything from the session, you will remember why you did a certain ingredient or why you used a certain ingredient a certain way, that you will choose to do the same thing or some other recipe. So I not only give them hints, tips, we cook. Now, in the 2 hour session, for example, I've had quite a few people come on board saying, I'm new to cooking. I don't know how to cook. I'm not a person who cooks at home. I don't like this, like that. Can I do? And I've always said to people, if you can follow instructions, if you want to try something new, if you want to learn something, you're more than welcome. You don't need to be an experienced person. It isn't about, oh, I'm just building on something. You can be as basic as I don't know, but I want to know. That's absolutely fine, because I also tell them the knife skills sometimes, what to do and how to chop and all those things. So on that journey, in the 2 hours, depending on the menu, we are making, well, in Britain, it's called a curry, like a dish. One other is a rice and one is a salad. So we're preparing three in 2 hours. Now, for a person who's never known what to do, or, oh, it takes a long time, will get an idea that, oh, okay, I've got some sort of a knowledge that I can go and possibly do just one dish or possibly alternate this. So I take them to the journey of how, not only how to do, but why to do, why you do it, what you achieve at the end, and how you can use these skills or these spices in different dishes. So at the end of it, I would like to think, and that's part of the reasoning, is that they feel empowered and happy, not only about the delicious food, that they have the confidence to go and do something new or to try the same recipe over and over again.
Yes, exactly. And that's so different, isn't it? I mean, anything that we learn kinesthetically with that ongoing support just embeds itself much more readily. And it can be really daunting to open up a recipe book. And if you're not a very experienced cook, reading the method can be quite challenging because so many cookbooks are written on the assumption that we already know something. I remember when I don't know what it was it 20 years ago, Delia Smith brought that series out, How To, and I think there are three books in it, and it was almost at the level of How To Boil an Egg. I mean, it wasn't quite that, but it wasn't very far. But it was, and she basically stripped it all back, and she just talked about very, very basic things. And I remember giving that to a friend, and it was revelatory, you know. So just to have somebody just to explain those basics, and as you say, to take the complicated element out of it, and to just instruct and teach whatever's needed at that time must be really, really helpful. So I can see that. So in this sort of group environment. And so through this process, and it might be with you, it might be doing anything really, you know, learning a new activity, there is that wonderful empowerment, isn't there? And it takes away the anxiety. And I'm thinking about my clients, and I'm kind of thinking that this sort of approach helps them fall back in love with food and helps them feel confident enough to be able to prepare food that is beneficial for them, a little bit different. So maybe there's a little bit of, you know, that slightly exotic, you know, overseas food culture element to it. And what I'd like to know is, so having busted some of these myths about being healthy, not being healthy, what is the benefits, and are there any other myths? So I'm thinking about the whole butter thing. Any other myths that you'd like to bust in that process to talk about the nutritional benefit, the kind of health benefit? And we're going to say here that you're not a nutritionist, you're a cook, but we know what's going in. We know that it's full of vegetables. We know how much oil, whatever, is going into something. So we don't need to be a nutritionist to be able to see and to be able to talk about that, do we?
No, not at all. And I always say all mums are nutritionists. Any person who cooks and feed, I look at them as a nutritionist in the way if they're saying, eat this, it's good for you, eat that, it's beneficial for you. They're all nutritionists in their own right. So, yeah, I think one of the fundamental myths, and I heard this even 2 days ago, and it's quite of baffled me, fascinated me to ask the question that ghee is fat, rather a bad fat. That still exists, I can say that. And Indian food is again heavy, greasy, oily. It's high in carbohydrates. It's spicy. I don't like it because it doesn't suit my stomach. Now, these are the common so-called myths or the things that I constantly hear. Now, I would like to say categorically, ghee, yes, it is fat, but it's a healthy fat. And I use avocado as a equivalent, saying avocado is also good fat, but we are not eating five avocados, we're eating one avocado, which is a healthy fat. Ghee is the same. Ghee comes from Ayurveda. If you are a person who practices Ayurveda, who's aware of it, or go to healthy eating, if you track back decades and centuries, Ayurveda has a lot of ghee in it. It's a plant based, but there is ghee. Ghee is fabulous any day above butter or oil, to be honest. Of course, everything in moderation. So that's the first thing I would like to say is it's very healthy, especially being a woman. It's so good for gut health. All I would say is just Google benefits of ghee. You will really see the truth of it as to what you think it could be. So that's number one. Secondly, the spiciness. Now, that's a very personal thing. And I love to say to my clients or people that I help and I teach, saying, oh, is this going to be spicy? Now, a common myth, the other one I'll burst is Madras, chicken Madras and thing. Oh, is Madras spicy, Sashi? Is a common question I get asked. And I always laugh. I said, Madras is a name of a place, which is Chennai now, which is where I come from, my husband comes from. So every house would have a Madras chicken or a chicken Madras if you go there. It's a name of a place. No two Madras is the same. So that itself is a myth in a way. Now, I'm always for a fact, flavors is your king. Whether you add half a teaspoon chili powder or 3 teaspoons of chili powder is your choice. Same with green chilies or red chili. So flavors is your king. It's always never like burn your tongue. No, that isn't the case. I don't buy that point. So it's always flavors. Salt is the same. Now it's heavy on stomach because you go to restaurant. Yes, restaurants, of course, are going to serve you with cream and butter and sugar because they want you to eat little. But that's not how you eat at home. And you're not going to be making a butter chicken every day. No, they are all occasional foods that you add an extra teaspoon of butter. Same goes for soup. If you're making soup, whether you add cream or not is your choice. Nobody's going to say, oh, you haven't added cream, so that's not right. No, it's a personal choice. It's the same. So real Indian food does not dictate all these so-called perceived notions of you need to do this. It's nothing like it. And the fact it comes from Ayurveda, vegetarian is naturally part of Indian food, which is what I've been growing up with. I'm a vegetarian, but I cook chicken, prawn, seafood for my husband. I mean, we all cook healthy food, but it doesn't necessarily mean heavy on ghee or heavy on fat. But I would personally say ghee is so good for gut health, especially women's health. And being a woman myself, I take a teaspoon of ghee in the morning and a teaspoon of ghee in the evening. That's my practice, just like that. But I make my own ghee. That's a different thing. So that's a fact that I would like, I mean, a myth that I would like to burst. And thirdly, people think including that as part of meal, it's like heavy on carb. Now, carbs comes in all shapes and forms. It's in every cuisine. So I always say, why is this a perception like, oh, it's heavy on carb? Yeah, whether you add a small, like a quarter cup of rice, or whether you eat 1 cup of rice is a personal choice. Now, if you know you want to have low carb, have quarter cup of carb because, especially coming from India, the way my body works and my husband's is, we do need that carb because we've grown up, and I recognize that. So I tend to eat a little bit of rice with more vegetables and sprouts and other things to go with it. My husband would go for half a cup of rice because that's his body, because then he starts craving for more. So all these myths about, oh, it's only this, I'm not sure why it still exists, but probably a nutritionist like yourself, with a person who advocates it, would really would like to tell people that that isn't the case. It's all about understanding what works for you. And the food, as you rightly said, until you try something new, you never know whether you're going to like it or not. But the only thing I would say is, if you want to learn something, not necessarily from me, anyone like me, is to go with an open mind, and you will be amazed as to what you will uncover there.
Yes. And so if we're eating and preparing genuine, authentic Indian food, what are the health benefits that you see in that food?
First of all, you know that you have prepared. Let's start from there. You've made food with your own hands. What better can it be? Even though we know we go, let's say, for example, you've bought food from somebody who's cooked for you, you've paid for it. They could have still made it healthy, but you preparing your food for you and your family, that brings a very kind of different joy. It's almost like falling in love. That is a good place to start in itself. So even before the healthy eating part comes in, the energy, the love, the feel that you bring, the emotion that you bring with it will sometimes, this is what I have realized, will take over whether the outcome of the food is right or not. That's the first thing. And then when you're doing it for your family, you know what you're putting it in. Not necessarily the energy, but how much goes in, and you've prepared it. But again, do you want to do it? Is the other thing. But preparing yourself at no point is always a given, that it is one of the best things that you can do for yourself and your family. I would say it's a gift that you give yourself and your family. And Indian food, as I said, it's endless. You can make it a simple one, you can make it a detailed one, but preparing food, be it Indian food or anything for that matter, Laurie, I always say, when you do it, you know how it's prepared. There's no question, no thought, no doubt in your mind. That itself, I feel, is very healthy. I might be eating the healthiest of food. I mean, this is my take on things. I could be wrong, but I could be eating the healthiest of things from a supermarket. But then, if I'm questioning, or if I'm thinking, have I eaten it right? Has it got this? If I start looking at the label, then I know it's not right. When I'm cooking at home, I'm not looking at the label. That's the best
Exactly.
I can describe.
Exactly. And so these recipes then generally that you teach, you are using quite a lot of vegetarian combinations and different combinations of spices and different ways to, I suppose, also change the texture of it. So whether it's slightly thicker or it's a slightly, well, I don't want to say runny because that sounds slightly disparaging. How would you describe it?
A little bit of a semi-dry sauce consistency.
Yes, semi-dry
Kind of.
sauce or not quite, or a little bit
That's
wetter. Yes. Well, I'm kind of imagining all these beautiful steaming plates and bowls and we're going to draw our conversation to a close shortly, but I just want to say that it's been incredibly inspiring, and I hope that for our listeners it has too. But I'm going to give you the chance to talk about anything else that we might not have covered. But just to say before that we will put in the blurb to the podcast all the links to give people the opportunity to dip into you, to have a bit of sashi in their life. You have a lovely Instagram feed with beautiful pictures and reels. And then, of course, there's the chance to actually learn from you if people want to do that. So is there anything else that you would like to talk about, to express in this wonderful relationship that you have now with this new career, teaching and bringing Indian food to people?
I think when I found myself, asking the question, what do I do? Do I go back to a corporate world? Is when the universe sends me these signals. And then I realized that food for me was not necessarily just a food that I was doing for my family, but I found a calling in it when I went to teach. And that's when I realized that, yes, there is a bigger and larger purpose. And knowing the gaps in the market or the perception, so that is where I decided, yes, this is what I love or I like. And as I said, it's a calling for life. And I would be able to love to help people or to even to have a conversation, not necessarily if they want to do a session with me. I know it's not probably, but it would be lovely, is to at least have a conversation and see, and if I could help them in any way, along with yourself or like yourself, is to understand food for what it is. Of course, from the Indian food perspective, not necessarily food in general. But all I would want to say to people listening out there is look at food as a not only a necessity, it's like loving yourself, because the word what you eat is what you are holds very true. And it starts from you picking up the ingredients to chopping it. So look at it as a journey. If you have a child that it's born, you're raising it, you love to see it flourish and cherish. Food is very similar. If you're not a parent, look at it from your garden perspective of you're planting a seed, you're seeing it nourished, you're seeing it grow, and look at the fruits of it. Food is just the same. And I'm teaching it through the medium of Indian food, and you can do it anyway. And that's pretty much the ethos. And I do have some sessions that I've scheduled for the new year, which also makes a great Christmas vouchers, birthdays, and so that's one other option. But I would love to have conversations with anyone who wants to talk about the food, and probably if they're struggling in terms of just getting an understanding, not necessarily, I would love to have a conversation with them.
That's so kind, thank you. Wonderful. Well, I mean, we are talking about this, aren't we, in autumn, 2023. So who knows? There is an opportunity. But outside of all that business stuff, which is important, that's what we're all trying to do, I am delighted to have experienced your soul around food and your connection with it. And I hope that it does encourage people to look more into the relationship they have with preparing the food and just making the time to be more mindful about it, because they are absolutely worth it. You, listener, are absolutely worth making this effort and preparing food that is going to nourish you and is going to make you feel good, not only physically, but also mentally as well. And maybe to take some time with a professional like Sashi to find out how you can be even more empowered around preparing wonderful food for you to make you feel great. Sashi, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you so much, Laurie. It's been an absolute privilege. I love talking to you and sharing my passion. Thank you so much.
You are very, very welcome. So that's it for another episode. There are lots of other Mindful Meats conversations on the podcast, as well as my mindful moments, which are very short, head emptying sessions on a number of different topics come to mind. So I hope that you enjoy all the others, and we will see you next time. Thank you for listening.